in due time. Hey, I'm Mickey. I'm an alcoholic.
Yay!
All right. I like it. Stan used to be enthusiastic, and now I don't think he sleeps as much, so kind of toned it down a little bit. But my sobriety date is August 31st, 1994. I have a sponsor. I sponsor others. I'm a member of the Friday night men's meeting at Yana. I want to thank Blair for asking me to speak. I want to welcome the newcomers. As I saw you guys raise your hands, I was thinking about my first meeting, and mine was a little bit different. This would be a little bit overwhelming, but welcome, and it's a great way of life. I also want to thank James. I think that was his name. That was good stuff, buddy. I've never been beat up by Samoans. I've never been to a Mexican strip club, but I did relate to your story, so that was good. I was born to be an alcoholic, you know. I don't have a doubt about it now. When I first came here, I didn't believe it, but when I grew up in New York, if you can't tell from the accent, came from a good family. They parents together, still together now. They loved me. I'm the oldest of six kids. Never wanted for anything. Never needed for anything. Had lots of friends in school. Did well in school. Did well in sports. Something about the way that I felt was wrong. I was on a team. Would be on the team for, you know, years. These are my friends that I grew up with from little kids, and I always felt like the outsider. No one ever treated me like the outsider. I just felt that way. In my family, I was always wondering if, you know, they loved my brother more than me. I just felt off. My father was had just got out of the Marine Corps when I was born. He was a worked for the federal government. He's kind of a straight-laced guy, and he grew up in an era where it wasn't, you know, let me hug my child and love, say I love you and all that good stuff that we do today. But when he drank, he did that. When he drank, it was a different kind of guy. When he was sober, and he's not an alcoholic by far. I used to wish that he drank, but when he was sober, it was like white glove inspections and what are you getting in school and how are we going to do in sports and all this other stuff. But when he drank, it was like, oh, Mickey, come here, my boy, you know, I love you, things are good. So from as long as I can remember, I wanted to drink. My father tells a story that the first time he caught me drinking, I was probably 2 years old. I don't remember this, but he woke up in the middle of the night, and I was downstairs drinking a beer, watching, you know, like the American flag on TV or something. So he knew I was in trouble from then on. I really started drinking like as soon as I could. I from a little kid, if we had family parties, I would drink. And then it was cute, you know, to give the kids some drinks, and I'm sure I got drunk. I don't remember, but what I do remember is I was a decent baseball player, and I used to play on a team with kids older than me. I was 11 or 12, and they were 15, 16, and 17, and they didn't want me on their team because I replaced one of their friends, and I didn't want to be on their team because I wanted to play with my friends. But it was the right thing to do, you know. All that impressed my father kind of stuff. So I did it, and I felt like an outsider. Until one game, you know, we won, we made some big tournament, and I got invited to the party afterwards. And I was really, really excited about this. And then kind of like, you know, before the meet, I got really scared. I was like, oh my God, now I'm going to go. And now there's going to be 15, 16, 17-year-old girls there too. And so I was like deathly afraid. And we go to this party, and I just do not fit in, but they're drinking. So they give me some drinks, and I don't know if it was the first drink, the second drink, I don't remember how many drinks. I just chugged, you know, and I do remember that moment when we used to call it the Irish tan, when, you know, I'm chugging, and I felt the warmth. I felt the warmth coming up from, like, deep down in my soul, up to my cheeks. My cheeks, they got red, And I came, you know, stopped drinking, and I looked around, and everything changed. Everything changed. The guys were glad I was there. You know, the girls were checking me out. You know, it was my life was altered forever. And I made a decision at that point that I was going to do that as often as I could. At 11 or 12, you can't do that too often. But I would come home from school. I would go into, like, my refrigerator. I'd steal a beer. I'd go into the bathroom, and I'd practice chugging, you know, because they had chugging contests. So, you know, I wanted to get good at drinking. I would practice doing shots. I'd practice mixing drinks because, you know, those people looked cool. And I would get drunk on my own at, like, 12, 13 years old. And I was thinking that, like, I'm a grown-up now, because this is what grown-ups do when they get home from school or work. They have a couple drinks. So there were no real consequences at that time, because when I came home drunk, it was cute. You know, you laugh. It's like, don't do it again. And it didn't interfere with my school too much until I went to an old boys school on Long Island, a school I didn't want to go to, but I went there because my father wanted me to go. I took German as a language, not because I wanted to learn German, you know, seriously, but because my father thought it would be good for banking. I'm not a banker, by the way. Turns out I was the only person in my class who hadn't lived in Germany. And the professor, I don't think, knew how to speak English, because he never spoke English. And I remember my first semester, I had all A's and a B. And I'd never gotten a B before. And I got a B, and I got a B in German. And I was okay with my B, because I, you know, studied hard. I don't know German. I don't know what I'm talking about. And my father sat me down, and we talked about how I had to improve my B. And he asked, and he suggested that maybe I should get a tutor. And I was done. You know, in my head, I turned off. I said, you know, I've done all this for you. That's the way I viewed it. You know, I've done all this for you, and this is what I get. You know, I'm done. I'm not trying anymore. I didn't tell him this out loud because I was scared to death of him. But, you know, in my head, that's what I did. And from that point on, I stopped. And all I did was focus on drinking, and I drank. My grades dropped dramatically. I played baseball and basketball in high school. At one time, you know, I maybe had a shot to play for some horrible college or something like that, but I totally ruined that stuff. And I got kind of like James. I got beat up a lot. I had a horrible mouth. I was a, you know, small, skinny kid, and when I was drunk, I couldn't run away, so I got beat up all the time. People from early age told me that I needed to stop drinking. And in my head, I thought, if you only knew. You know, you are asking for me to stop the one thing in my life that makes me feel good. You know, I understand that, you know, I mess everything up. I get that. I get that I don't show up where I'm supposed to be. I get that I forget to come home. I get that I hurt the people that love me. I get all that stuff. But drinking is the one thing in my life that makes me feel okay. Drinking is the one time where I have those moments where I think you like me. You know, otherwise, I think the world hates me. I think my own parents don't love me. They do, but I think that. My perspective is just so off. And you guys want me to stop. I can't do it. There's just no way. And so what ends up happening, I get kicked out of my house because my father says to me, you don't come home. You know, we worry sick about you. I have five other kids. This is, you know, really a disruption to the whole family. I've done everything I can to try to get you to stop, and I don't know what to do. You're going to have to leave. And so I go to a friend's house, and then another friend's house, and then another friend's house. And, you know, people don't like you sleeping on the couches for too long, especially when you eat all their food, drink all their liquor, and everything else. So I leave, and I ask to go home one more time. I'm going to get one more shot. My dad says, you know, this is the rules. You know, you got to be home at X hour. You know, if you don't come home, don't bother. That night, I don't come home. I try to come home the next morning. He's like, you don't live here anymore. I think to myself, well, I just turned 18. I said, all right, well, I'm going to move into the city. I could do it. Things will be great. And you know what? I'm going to celebrate my newfound freedom. So I go out and I get drunk in Manhattan by myself. And I used to hang out in Manhattan at night. It was a good place to hang out. There was people who hang out all night long. It's good stuff. And they don't care where you sleep. In the morning, they don't want you sleeping there. But, you know, I used to sleep in between buildings, that kind of stuff. And as long as I was drunk, I didn't care. So I wake up with these guys, and they have a little system. You wake up in the morning, and then you walk around to different corners, and you ask people for money. Seems like a good plan. So I did that, and I made a ton of money. I was like, this is good stuff. I don't even need a job, you know? So, and I had gone to this corner, and I did so well in that corner. The next day, I went back. And what it is you get people coming, you know, off the subways and the trains and going to work. Well, the same people get off the trains and the subways and go to work every day, you know. And there's not too many 18-year-old kids in a polo shirt begging for money at that time. So I was recognized by one individual who not so kindly told me what he thought of me and you know, told me, you know, some not so nice things that made me feel like he was a loser. Not that I was a loser, not that I was a bum, but that he was. And so I went and did my thing, and God bless the people who live on the streets. I couldn't do it, you know. Something would happen where I would always eventually end up sober. You know, if I was drunk 24/7, I didn't care. You know, but something about the way that people look at you when you're sober and you're dirty and you smell and you're begging for money, can't do it, you know. And I had an incident that, you know, it was raining. I was in the subway trying to get out of the rain and get to sleep on one of the uncomfortable benches, and a cop came by with a nightstick and hit me and said that, you know, no bums sleeping in the subway. I tried to explain to him that I wasn't a bum, that I was from Long Island, that, you know, I have a good family, you know, and he, in such not so nice words, explained that I was drunk, I smelled, and I was sleeping in the subway. I was a bum. So we fought about that for a little bit, but he won. I got kicked out into the rain, and you know, probably the next day or the day after that, they kind of blur together. But it's in the morning, and I'm walking, and my father pulls up next to me in a car. If you haven't been, Manhattan's kind of a big place. I don't know how he found me, but he's there, and he says, you know, you want to go for breakfast? And I'm thinking, my head immediately goes, finally came to his senses, he's going to invite me home, he misses me, everything's going to be okay. And I get in the car, and you know when you're like that half drunk in the, I know you guys know, but you're half drunk in the morning and people are talking to you and you really have no idea what they're saying, but you're looking for keywords, and it's like, it's kind of like, you know, I don't know. I have no idea what he's saying. And then I hear home, and I'm like, yes. And so I go home, and I take a shower. It was a fantastic shower. I get into bed. I fall asleep. At some point, either it felt like 15 seconds later, two guys come into my room, my bedroom, that I haven't slept in for I don't know how long, pull me out of my bed, throw some clothes at me, and they take me to my first meeting. Now, my first meeting was at Belmont Racetrack in a little house with probably like 15 guys. And it was like one flew over the cuckoo's nest because, like, one of my baseball coaches were there, a couple of my dad's friends were there, and the guy who was chairing the meeting had a white lab coat on. Yeah, and I was just like, oh my God, this is it. You know, I'm going to the loony bin. It's all over. And they gave me I never drank coffee before. They gave me coffee. I spilled it all over the guy next to me. They didn't give me any more coffee. I don't know what anyone said. I have no idea. I didn't even know there were steps. You know, if you're doing your steps right now, just wait a little bit. As soon as the meeting was over, like, all I'm thinking is, I know there's a liquor store like right around the corner that I can go to. And as soon as the meeting was over, I found my time and I ran like I was escaping from them. And I went to the liquor store and I got drunk. And I went home and my father explained what I had agreed to when we were sitting in that car, that I had agreed to go to meetings every day. I agreed to see a psychiatrist, and I agreed to go back to school. I didn't agree to stop drinking. He didn't ask me to. He said, try. And so I went to meetings every day. Going to meetings, I did not want to be an alcoholic. Actually, I didn't really care if I grew up to be an alcoholic. I wanted to be a functioning alcoholic. Like, I wanted what, those people who had, who are my age now, who got to drink for another 20 years and then come in. And so I'm talking, and I didn't understand this, but they're looking at it, and they're like, over those 20 years, they'd ruined careers. They, have kids that won't talk to them. They've gone to jail, numerous times. And I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, I want that, You can't take that away from me, And, I had never had a DUI. I got kicked out of driver's ed for drinking and driving, okay? I was not going to have a license, I never got married. I'm 18 years old. I spend my time hanging out with bums in Manhattan. It's not like I'm going to land a girlfriend, It's just these things aren't... And I couldn't show up for anything, so there was no way I was going to get a job. I just was not going to make it. I wasn't going to make that point where I could lose anything. I was never going to get anything at all. And so I looked at this thing and I thought, my problem isn't, and if you hear people say it, my problem isn't when I'm drunk. My problem is when I'm sober. If being sober was okay, sure, I'd just stop. And then, some people say, just don't drink and go to meetings. That does not work for me. I could not do it. I would try to, the people at the meetings asked me not to drink before the meetings. I would try. I would really try. But 7 o'clock, there's a lot of hours before 7 o'clock at night. I started to go into noon meetings, so I wouldn't drink before the noon meeting. But what happened to me was you guys, somehow got in my brain. You ruined the one thing that was good for me. It stopped working. It stopped making me feel good. The world, my perspective stopped changing when I got drunk. And those things that you guys said would happen have been happening all along, but I started to realize, oh my God, they're happening. Yes, I get beat up when I get drunk. Yes, I don't go home and I hurt people. Yes, I do horrible things that, at the time I didn't feel bad about, but I knew that I should. I knew that the things that I was doing were hurting the people that I cared about. And I did them anyway. But I had an incident where I got beat up pretty bad. I ended up in the hospital with my jaw wired shut. And I had my eye socket fractured. And I got shot at. And I had prayed as I was running away that they wouldn't kill me. And as soon as I stopped shooting, I didn't thank God. I didn't, think, oh my God, I'm so lucky that I'm alive. I thought, I know where I'm going. And I went somewhere else and I did what I do until my jaw was so puffed up that I couldn't do it anymore. And I go to the hospital and, I get wired up and I wake up and, when you wake up and you think, oh my God, this is what happened. And I thought about what you people in AA said, and I thought, maybe they're right. maybe I'm an alcoholic who has to stop now. Maybe I'll never get my dream of being a functioning alcoholic. It's just not going to happen for me. So I had this opportunity to go to treatment, and so I went. I went to it was a beautiful place, and my jaw was wired shut, so I didn't talk. That was cool. And I stayed sober for 30 days. I'd never stayed sober for 30 days before, and I wasn't really happy about it, but it wasn't so bad, and treatment was nice, and I learned how to play chess and backgammon, and then I went back to New York, and they said I was willing to get a sponsor, But I'm 18, you know, and everyone in those meetings that I was going to was like, they were old. They were like 35 and 40 and yeah, God. And to me, they were just so old. So I found another guy who was like 2 years older than me, and he had 60 days sober. So I asked him. He had what I wanted. He had 60 days. He didn't have a sponsor, so I was willing to give it away. So I became his sponsor. And kind of missed the boat on that one. But so we were miserable. And we went to meetings, you know, and we'd go hang out with like our old friends, and we were going to bars, and we were doing everything except the steps. We'd read the book together. We had no idea what we were doing. It's a bad idea, you know. And we'd pray together and meditate, and I heard God talking, and it was good, and God told me to go to this bar, and, you know, it was just like bad, bad thing. And when I got my 90 days, it was pretty much I'm either going to kill myself or I'm going to drink. So I drank. And actually, we flipped my 90-day coin to see who drank first, and we drank together. Yeah. And I came to back in treatment. I'm not sure how long I was out for. They just brought me back. And so I'm in treatment. Now my jaw's not wired shut, so I have to talk. And it was different, you know. And I talked, and I learned. And I started to feel a little bit different. And I became a little more willing. With each thing that happened to me, I became a little more willing. And I was willing to, you know, they had suggested long-term treatment, so I went to Turning Point of Tampa. I wanted Newport Beach Sobriety by the Sea. My father wanted, like, Wisconsin or something like that, so we agreed on Tampa. I'd never been here before. And the brochure was different than what it actually looked like, but yeah, when I first got here, I was like, this is not Florida. But anyway, so I spent 7 months in treatment, and they took us to meetings, and it was incredible. You know, it really was. I got a sponsor. I did the steps. I went to some conventions. I hung out with people sober. Every once in a while, I had a good time. I went through, you know, dealing with all my issues. And then I drank. You know, I drank because there was stuff going on with me that I was unwilling to ask for help about. There was stuff that I was not willing to, like, I was only willing to go so far with the steps. The fourth step does not mean everything. It means everything but those things that you don't want to share. That's what I thought. You know, it's call your sponsor every day means, you know, wait until you're pretty sure that he's asleep and he's not going to answer and then call. There weren't cell phones back then. It was like, I know he's on, now he left for work, I'm calling. You know, it was like, and I just hurt. You know, I hurt, and when I hurt long enough, I drink. And when I drink, things go bad. I mean, immediately. So I get sober again, and I get out of Turning Point, and I stay sober in Tampa for a year, and I fire my sponsor right about a year because he didn't know what he was doing. So I sponsor myself, and I make a decision that I'm done with Tampa. I'm going to move to Boca because Boca is like a cooler place, and I'm going to move one of my buddies from New York that I grew up with, and he's going to move down. We're going to go to school together. I'm not worried about drinking because he knows that I shouldn't drink. He drinks. We used to drink together. But he told me that he's not going to let me drink no matter what because he sees what it does to me. So we go to Boca, and I go to a couple meetings because I know that's what I'm supposed to do. And I go to one meeting in particular that it was a We Agnostics meeting. And at the end of the meeting, everyone whipped out a rock instead of saying the Our Father or Serenity Prayer, and they talked to their rock. And it works for you. And that worked for them. But I didn't have a rock, you know. So I felt out of place again, and I thought, this is it. This is what I needed. I'm done. And I went to Hooters. And I got drunk. That's what I do when I go to Hooters. I got drunk, and And bad things happened right away. And that poor kid that moved down, you know, we had to move out within I'd ruined everything. I ended up moving back home to my parents' house, who they let me move into their basement. And the one thing that happened from that, the best thing ever, was that for the first time in my life, beyond a shadow of a doubt, I wanted to be sober. I knew that the reason why I was a loser was because I drank. I knew that the reason why I felt so bad was because I drank. You know, it used to be the thing that made me feel good. And then it just made me feel worse and worse and worse. And I did not believe that the steps were going to make me feel better. I didn't. You know, I did not buy into that your way of life. But I bought into that my way did not work. You know, I bought into that the things that I was doing, unfortunately, I wasn't going to die. I was just going to keep on living this way of a miserable existence, and I couldn't do it anymore. I just couldn't. And there was no way that I would ever be able to do it for 20 years. You know, my dreams were over. So I got a sponsor, the guy who had helped me in New York for years, and I said, you know, I'm willing to do anything. And he set me running, and we started doing the steps right away, and I got a job in Manhattan at a hotel cleaning ashtrays. And I got a commitment at every meeting, or a meeting every day of the week. I cleaned ashtrays at meetings every day. They made me be the greeter, because you have to say hi to people, and I wasn't good at that. I wanted to be a coffee maker, too. They let me be assistant coffee maker. You know, but it got me to show up every day. And every week, I met with my sponsor, and we did my steps. And the steps changed my life. The same way that that drink did that first, you know, time that I could really remember where it changed my perspective. Over a period of time, the steps changed my perspective on the world. You know, it wasn't as dramatic. You know, it wasn't like all the girls at the party were checking me out. But it was different. You know, it was like, it was kind of, I won't say like humility, you know, but it was more right sized. You know, I wasn't as bad as I thought I was. I was never going to be as cool as I thought I wanted to be, but I wasn't as bad as I thought I was either. I was just going to be another guy. And I had to start becoming okay with that. I did my steps. I did 7 meetings a week at least. We went to, on weekends, we went to different jails and institutions and brought meetings in. And my life got better. And I got happy, and I laughed, and I enjoyed it. But then I looked, and I'm living in my parents' basement. And I am, good stuff. And I am, I'm the oldest of 6 kids, you know, and the rest of my siblings are going off to school, to college, and I graduated high school. Just not really, they gave me a diploma. Had nothing to do with me, but I went to my prom sober, and I thanked my professors, and they gave me a diploma. But so I had the opportunity to go to college. So I went to my parents. I was like, hey, you know, it's like, what about some money to go to college? And they're like, seriously? You know, 3 treatment centers? You're on your own. And so I'm watching TV, like on my day off from cleaning ashtrays, and I'm thinking, you know, there's got to be more to life than this. And I see that commercial, a Be All You Can Be commercial, and it looked pretty cool. They made it different, but it was like going down zip lines, and we'll pay for school, and I was like, awesome. So I got in my car, I got my license and sobriety, that's pretty awesome, and I drove down to the recruiter's office, and my dad was a Marine, so I knew I didn't want to do that. And he talked about that the Air Force were really soft. You know, it's the easier, softer way. So I went directly to the Air Force. But I'm 6 months sober, you know, and I've done all the steps. I'm practicing these principles in all my affairs. So when they ask me questions, I tell them the truth. So they say, have you tried this? I'm like, yes. Have you tried this? Yes. We get to a certain point, and she's like, you can leave. And so I go to the Marine Corps because, you know, why not? They'll let anybody in. So I go to the Marine Corps, and the guy says to me, Well, when you have a year, we get you a waiver, you know, and then you're good. Well, I don't know about you guys, but like when I make a decision, I want to do it now. So they're smart. They put all these recruiters all right next to each other. So then I just go into the Army and I tell the Army guy, and he's like, don't worry about it, just lie. So I was like, sweet, I'm in. And so I sign. I just sign up right then and there, and I go to my meeting that night, and go to my sponsor. I'm like, hey, guess what I did? And he's like, what? And I was like, I signed up. And he looks at me like I'm a retard. He's like, didn't you learn anything over the past 6 months? And I said, well, you said I've been through my steps. I could start making some of my own decisions. And he's like, I meant like if you want to mix up a meeting or something, but, you know, come on. So I only signed up for the reserves, but so I go to boot camp and I go to another school and there's no meetings there. So I become angry. You do okay in the military. They like angry people, so I do okay. And I get out and I decide that I don't want to live in New York. I mean, I miss Florida. I mean, this is good living down here, and I want it back. So I come back, I get assigned to a unit down here, and I go to, I get a job, I sign up at HCC, which I was deathly afraid of. If anyone's afraid of going back to school, my first semester I spent 2 days in the parking lot and never went in. You know, I just couldn't do it. I was like, I'm retarded, I know I'm retarded, and now everyone else is going to know, so I can't do it. Fortunately, I go to this reserve. It's like 1 weekend, a month thing. And I go to my first thing, and they're like, hey, you know, we're getting deployed. I'm like, no, they told me that you never get deployed. There's no way. That's a joke. You're messing with me. That was like the joke on the new guy. I'm like, no, we're going to Haiti. I was like, Haiti? You know, who goes to Haiti? Why are we going there? And we went. You know, we went to Haiti. And it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. You know, I get down there, and there's no meetings. You know, and I talk to people, and they set up this plan, and I had a big book, and I talked to the chaplain, and we agreed that I could use the chaplain's tent for meetings. So I write on, you know, the bulletin board. You know, there were, like, volleyball game, basketball game. Friends of Bill W. was meeting at the chaplain's tent at 7. And I go to the chaplain's tent at 7, and there I am, and there's nobody there. And I'm, like, depressed. I'm like, I know you guys are drunks, because I'm watching. You could drink, you know, and there's people drinking all over the place, and guys in my tent were getting chipped in, like, you know, booze and, like, Listerine bottles and stuff. And I'm there by myself, and I'm upset, because I want to drink. You know, I have about 18 months sober now, and but I don't want to drink. But I want to drink. But I don't want to drink, and I don't know what to do. And so I pray, and I decide I'm going to have a meeting. So I open the meeting, same way we do here, and I asked if anyone had a topic. And I had a topic. So I shared. And I was pretty sure what you would tell me about after I'm sharing, and so I pretended I was somebody else. And there was a couple times where I got up and moved seats. So if anyone would have came to that meeting, they probably would have, like, sent me away. But I was there for 6 months, and what happened was I developed a relationship with my higher power because that's all I had. I became dependent on my God. I came to know my God, a thing that I wouldn't have done if I hadn't been put in that spot. You know, and I used to tell my story to my tent mates as they were drinking their, you know, tequila out of the Listerine, and they were laughing. They're like, "You're retarded," and I stayed sober. You know, and it was amazing. And I got back, and I went, and when we came back, I went to meetings right away. And then I came back to Tampa, and I went to some meetings. And your meetings weren't as good as my meetings, you know? I was the center of attention at my meetings. And I started thinking, I don't need you guys. I mean, I just did it. 6 months. Who needs you? And I became miserable real quick, you know? And I started taking credit for what God did for me. I mean, just like that. was like, I was praying, I was asking for help, I was like, I can't do this, I don't know how I'm going to do it, please, please help me. And then I'm back here, I'm like, yep, I did it, I'm good, who needs you? And God made me humble, you know, and I felt it, and I did the steps again, and life started to get good again. And I went to school. When I show up and I'm not drunk and I do okay in school. I'm not retarded, which was good to find out. And so I did school. I got a job. I got really involved in AA. Some people crazy enough to ask me to sponsor them. I sponsored them. Most of them didn't stay sober, but I did, you know. And life just got good. I mean, really, really good. And then I went to I moved away to Gainesville to go to another school. Because when you graduate, it's like, what do you do now? It's like, find another school to go to. So I went to another school, and I was having a blast, you know, and I'm all excited about my future because, you know, I'm sober. I feel good about myself. I have a great relationship. I have great friends in AA. My relationship with my family is what I always wanted it to be, better than what I wanted it to be. And I'm just, like, living the dream. And then on, you know, the certain day, I'm getting ready to go to a Kentucky, Florida basketball game, and I get this phone call, and it's the Army calling again, and they're like, hey, you're activated, you know, you're going to Iraq. I was like, whoa, I think I'm out. They're like, no, you're not out, you got 7 days left on your contract, you know, report at, you know, such a date. So I was in my last semester of this school. I had, like, this job lined up. I had, like, you know, dreams of grandeur, and, like, life is just about to take off for me. I've been eating peanut butter and jelly for a long time, and I wanted some steak. I wanted to live the dream, and now I was going away. And I thought, you know, I prayed, and that night, I still remember that night, and it was like, I know you got something for me. You know, I don't know what it is. I don't necessarily think I'm agreeing with it, you know, but you haven't steered me wrong yet, and so we can do this. We'll go. And not that I really had a choice, but that's what we tell ourselves, I guess. So I show up, and I get sent overseas, and real quick funny story was as we're flying over there, we were prepared for a whole bunch of different things, and we went over in March, and I'm in the reserve, so we're not really getting a do much, you know, we're just kind of going to be bodies there. But so I'm asleep on this plane, we're on this plane for like 20 hours, and all of a sudden it starts like boom, and like it's rocking, and I wake up out of this sleep, and I think, oh my God, I'm gonna die right now. You know, all this thing to die in a plane on the way over, this is crazy. And I look out, it's like a thunderstorm. It's like the last thing I expected. It's like we landed in Kuwait in a thunderstorm. But so it rains there sometimes. So I spend about 6 or 7 months over there, and it was, again, a really neat experience. I did go to one meeting with other people, and that was pretty neat. And met a lot of great people, had some fantastic experiences. And again, I became closer to my higher power. You know, when I'm here, I have you guys. I have the TV. I have work. I have all these things that I put before God. You know, the one thing that really makes me feel good, I put other stuff in front of it. You know, because when it's, you know, 8 o'clock at night and, you know, Modern Family's on, I'm thinking, I want to watch TV, you know, or like Yankee baseball's on, I'm watching baseball. I'm not praying, I'm not meditating, I'm not doing a daily inventory. But when I'm hurting, that's where I go. You know, I hope to one day get to that spot where I'm doing it consistently on a daily basis. But for me, pain is still the touchstone of my spiritual growth. You know, I do certain things. I think over time, sobriety has blessed me with my threshold level for pain has changed dramatically. I don't like being uncomfortable. You know, it used to be in the beginning where I would get to that point where I was almost going to drink before I was willing to call my sponsor and say, I need help. You know, now it's like I'm a little uncomfortable. I'm like, hey, can we meet? You know, and I pray every day. I talk to another alcoholic every day. I read AA literature every day. Some days it's more meaningful than others for me. But, you know, today, thinking about speaking, I was where I was when I came to my first meeting to my life today is two different people, you know, two totally different people. I have a wonderful wife. I have a wonderful job. I have incredible friends. I have, you know, an incredible relationship with my family. I don't want to die. You know, I get excited when I wake up in the morning about my day. You know, I am so glad to be alive. I was not scared to come to an AA meeting and speak, you know, because I know it doesn't really matter. You know, I'm not that important. It used to be like I was shaking because I was so afraid that you guys were going to know that I was an idiot. Now I don't care. You know, I mean, I kind of care. I'm not one of those people who can say that I don't care what people think of me. I do. You know, I do. I just don't care as much. You know, I don't let it prevent me from doing the things that I want to do. You know, and AA has blessed me with so many different things. But like what James was talking about before, it's given me a God. You know, it's given me a God that solves all my problems. All I have to do is ask Him and let Him. You know, I constantly get in the way. I constantly cause pain in my life. But I don't drink. I keep going to meetings. I do my best to ask for help. And when, you know, someone asks me to do something, I think that's the greatest thing that I learned in AA, is if someone asks me, I say yes. You know, someone asks you to speak. I haven't spoken for a long time, I think. And then, like the past month, three different times I've been asked to speak. And I guess I needed it, you know, because otherwise I wouldn't have been asked. One thing that I hold on to all the time, and it goes back to thinking about things that I thought were bad. It is a thing in the book. It talks about that nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. And the things that I used to think were the worst days of my life are the things I'm most grateful for. You know, the getting my jaw wired shut got me willing to come to, you know, go to treatment. You know, getting kicked out of my house got me to a spot where I was willing to go to an AA meeting. You know, getting sent away to Haiti gave me a relationship with God. You know, it's I don't know what's right for me. I don't know what's best for me. But if I just keep on putting one foot in front of the other and I let God do His job, then I think great things are in store for me. So that's all I got. Thanks.